Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now. We Talk Productions is one of the few black internet radio stations that discuss black issues and solutions. And I am Kenny Jones of Black Herb America, which come on Tuesday evenings at 8 p.m. On Wednesday evenings, we have Shaka Zulu that have The Elephant in the Room. On Friday, we have April Jones with Birth to Life. On Saturday, we have Carlton on Provocative Thoughts. Every third Tuesday of the month, we have Keep Calm and Let's Discuss Racism with, this is a good thing too, from Mississippi, Melinda Medina, T. Nathan Farley, and Reginald Virgil. And the last Thursday each month, we have Shields of the Nation by Michael Francis. Now, this guest tonight, it appears that she's evolved in the community. She had this event or this organization, I should say, called Girls in Action, and she worked on domestic violence. She's an author. I just want to know what does she do, you know? Her name, and she is the owner of KIP Consulting Services. Her name is Ms. Ann Dillard. Ms. Dillard, welcome to Black Urban America.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Jones. It's a pleasure to be here with you tonight.
Oh, no. The pleasure's all mine. The honor is all mine. And what you do in the community, it should be honored. And like, I wish I could vote for Person of the Year, because there's so many brothers and sisters around the country that are doing so much, they don't get the recognition, and that's why I have Black Urban America and We Talk Productions, because of people like you.
Oh, thank you. The honor is all mine. The pleasure is mine to be here.
You're in Minnesota right now, right? You got something going on tomorrow in Minnesota?
I haven't left yet. I'm still in Atlanta. And I'll be boarding the plane early in the morning tomorrow because I have a book signing in Minnesota. Yes, sir.
Yes. Did I mention to my audience that you are an author also?
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
I am okay.
A co-author with the Unchain My Legacy. It's an anthology. It talks about how do we repair the issues of our lives so that we don't pass on all these baggages to our children and our children's children. So it's a really powerful anthology.
Yeah. Well, with that, I would think that first, yeah, I know people are resistant to this, they have to be open to change. They have to be open to some of the issues that are affecting their growth.
Absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I think before they get to be open to change, I think they have to have some awareness first because,
you know, how it is.
If you live in water, you never know that you're out of, you're in water until you're out of it, right?
Right.
So you have to have some awareness that this kind of dysfunction has got to stop. And there is a different way of living.
Let me ask you this. I know we're going to talk. We're going to talk about suicide prevention. We're going to get there. We're going to get there. But I just want to, why? And now this is something I've been trying to explore for the past 25 years. And each generation is something different. But why do we have so much dysfunction? Even if we well off, you know, why we have so much dysfunction in the black communities, in the black families?
Well, I think, you know, we can trace it as far back as slavery, and some of it was intentionally orchestrated. And so and a lot of people will say, well, slavery has been so many years now, we need to get over it. But we don't get over historical trauma. And so we have to really come together and really educate ourselves and be intentional about what are the changes. Well, first of all, what's the vision that we're going to write for our families? What is the vision that we have for our generations? And be intentional about doing that.
And, well, let me ask you this. Since we are a division of our family, I just want to add now, I had several guests that came on this show, and the topic had been dysfunctioning in the black community and in the black family. Now, some people theorize that, it's the man. The man that needs to be close, even if he's not involved with the woman, he needs to learn how to co-parent with the woman to raise his children. Number two, we're talking about a value system. Some of the value systems have changed over the years, and as a community and families, we are losing some of the fundamental values, for example, parents being involved in their children's lives. They're working so hard, you know, they don't have time, and video games and TV are raising our children. So, in your view, is to blame, or who's to blame for this? That of not trying to elevate our families.
Right. You know, I think you asked a very critical question, and my response to that is to say that, you know what, it's time out to stop trying to figure out who is to be blamed for it, because we spin our wheels pointing fingers at this one and that one, the lack of the male presence, the lack of being involved in church. We can spin our wheels talking about that so much and never get to the point where we look at ourselves and say, what do I need to do? How do I need to be the change that I want to see in our community? And I think that's where we start, because I don't know that there's any one answer, but I think if we start looking at it from a more solution-focused standpoint, we'll be able to make some strides.
What is Girls in Action?
Girls in Action really is a mentorship program. It's a high-touch program where we work with girls on a weekly basis to empower them, to engage them, to encourage them, and to be successful in their lives and in their communities. And so Girls in Action, it was started in Minnesota by Dr. Verna Cornelia Price.
Yeah,
and
I saw
when
her.
I
yeah.
moved
you
to Atlanta, yeah.
The bar, right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and when I moved to Atlanta last year, she asked me if I would head up the program here in Atlanta. And so we served at Harper Archer Middle School last year. We served 40 girls, 7th and 8th graders. And now we're back at Harper Archer this year, and they want us to serve all 115 girls. But due to funding, because we have to find our own funding streams, and due to funding, we can only serve 60 girls this year, but we really have a desire to serve all 115 girls.
60 girls is a lot of girls. And you talk about
it is a lot of girls.
Now, all these girls come from one school, or they come from a specific
school.
Region in Atlanta?
No, one school. They're all at Harper Archer, so we are only at Harper Archer Middle School. And the great thing about it is that we bring in women leaders who become mentors to these young women, and we work with them to realize their personal power. We teach them about critical thinking, strategic planning, and help them, to look at the many dimensions of their personal power and how they can use that to not just lead themselves, but to also be leaders in their communities.
You need to tell the doctor that this program needs to be in every major Black community across this nation. This is needed.
And you're so right. And that's her vision. Her vision is to make sure it is in every major city in the country. And the thing about it is we have to enroll the leaders of the communities to say, you know what, I want that in my community, because it's not about us going and planting there, but the community embracing and supporting a program such as this.
Moving right along, Miss. I got so much I want to talk to you about.
Let's talk.
Yeah. Ray Rice, about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, Ray Rice was a halfback for the Baltimore Ravens. And he was caught on video then beating his girlfriend. Now they're married. Talk about dysfunction. But since then, it appears that the Black man has become the face of domestic violence. And we all know that Black men are not the only ones. I'm not saying we don't, but we're not the only ones in this world that lay hands on we're not supposed to put hands on nobody. But the one I know about the 6 different factors of domestic violence. But how come the Black man, for every negative behavior, just like this sexual assault with Bill Cosby, only one to go to prison. But what happened to Weinstein, Mount Lowry, that other guy from Frontline? How do the Black man become the face of these two really nasty behaviors?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. There's a phrase, when you said that, it made me think about this phrase, and I don't know if I'm going to get it right, but it says something to the fact that if the hunter keeps telling the story, he'll always be the hero.
Wow.
So we really have to look at who's telling the story.
They call it narrative now. Who's telling the narrative?
See, who's telling the story? Because the media has a way of painting a picture and dictating a narrative that will make you believe what they want you to believe. And we have to be very careful of the single-sided narrative.
And even the President of the United States, which I don't like to mention his name, I'm sorry, even the President of the United States was caught on tape bragging about assaulting women. And nothing, nothing. This guy, Kavanaugh, the guy that go for the Supreme Court.
Yes, Supreme
Court. Woman in high school. Nothing. He going to become a Supreme Court justice, just like Clarence Thomas did with Anita Hill. Why aren't we taking this more seriously?
Clarence Thomas,
we talk about close to 30 years ago, because we talk about the Daddy Bush. That was Daddy Bush's appointment. And here, 30 years later, we got another one. And he's going to be a sign off on bills, making legislation, making new laws concerning this major issue.
Well, you know, I there's so many different dimensions to this, and it's really a challenging subject for me, because when, as a licensed marriage and family therapist, I have to also look at it from a professional standpoint, and people talking about the validity of the women's stories and why didn't they come before and things like that, and who am I to say when you should have the courage to tell the story of your violation? I can't say that, and you know, we, as I'm going out on the limb when I say this, we as Black people, we keep looking to the government to validate us with laws that created.
I've been beating that drum for years. We have to stop looking at the White House, the State House. Well, we got to be involved with local politics. We really do. But can we do this? Can we have this? You know, we got to start becoming more independent. One more thing I want to ask before we go to the topic of tonight. You said you're a marriage and marriage counselor, right? I read one time that 72% of Black women will be married more than one time.
Wow.
Yeah, I read that because I had somebody on that was a marriage counselor about 9 months ago, and I was doing research on it because I really don't know everything. And 72% will be married for a second time. How come the marriage? It's not only a Black America issue. I think it's American culture issues. That marriage, you think marriage is taken seriously today?
I think there are so many different things in our culture that influences marriages. There's so much. Wow, where do you even start? There are still people, there's a portion of the population who takes this seriously. However, I think that a lot of times, there's a large group of people who go into it saying, you know, if it don't work, then, you know, oh, well.
I mean, without even thinking about it, one lawyer told me that the reason why is because it's so easy to get a divorce. I mean, do you really sit down and think how does it affect the children and other family members, the in-law? They get divorced like nothing. You do it your own divorce.
Exactly. Today. And then you see these are the things we pass down.
Yeah.
And we keep passionate from generation to generation, but you know, I don't like it, but if for those who are proactive, they'll bring their children to me.
Wow.
Because there's very there are, I don't know if we're thinking about the children and the impact of the children and the displacement and the trauma that it causes. I don't even know that the individuals think about the trauma that it causes them for those kinds of transitions. And I'm not saying that you have to stay in every situation, because there are situations where you need to leave for your safety and your well-being. But I don't know that much thought is given to it, because a lot of times we've become very intolerant and we've become lacking in empathy and compassion in a lot of our ways.
One moment, Ms. Delia. Anyone that's listening to the show by computer or laptop, you could dial 909-265-9215. Okay. You know, like, I know I discuss a lot of issues with you. I mean, each of those issues could be a show within itself.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because it had me thinking that there are a lot of issues that we still got to find solutions for. And this program's all about discussing solutions for our issues. Now, I was reading 800,000 people die each year due to suicide.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that an astronomical?
I thought I was reading it wrong. I thought it was like 800. Then I saw those three zeros that were separated from the 800. I said, I got to ask her tonight. 800, that's close to 1 million people.
A year.
A year.
Just think about the impact that has, because once one person dies by suicide, you can, you know, best believe that it's affecting so many degrees of people around them.
Why would a person just wake up one day and say, I'm going to leave this earth? Or is it an escalating thought process?
You know, I think it's both, and because there are some people, a large portion of people who die by suicide, they have, you know, mental illnesses, or, you know, they're depressed, or life circumstances have brought that about. So it's not necessarily in some cases it's an event that happens that triggers them to doing that.
Mm.
So, for example, a breakup, you know, so when we see a lot of the primary population that I work with are teens. So when we see a lot of teens who are in despair or are feeling helpless and hopeless, usually it's after a significant breakup or an argument with their parents, or some kind of offense in a relationship, in a friendship, or in school issues.
So either they're gonna shoot up the place or take themselves out. We've been having an epidemic of school shootings in the last 4 or 5 years, I say the last decade. So if a kid becomes depressed, they either go shoot somebody else or go shoot themselves.
Well, it depends on who's telling the story again.
Okay. Now this was alarming. This was alarming, and I almost fell out the chair where I was going. I didn't realize. And I, uh-huh. You know, just certain things just get passed passed you through the years. The suicide
right.
rate among black children had doubled since the 90s. Now, when I say children, we ain't talking about 17, 18-year-olds. We talk about 7 to 11-year-olds.
Yes, and we can go as low as 5. And you know,
five.
In Atlanta, where we both live, they have a 7-year-old, I think, is the youngest that they have on record. But we can go as low as 5, where it's documented that children have died by suicide.
Well, like when you say 5 and 7, is that accidental suicide, if there's such a thing? They say some teens now, this is just a stereotype, I don't know if it's true or not, they say some children that try to commit suicide or suicidal attempts, it's just a cry for help.
Well, I think in a lot of cases, I think that could be valid.
That is
a cry for help, because a lot of times people don't think about when a person is displaying signs, right? They don't necessarily pick up on the signs, and so if they see something and don't even know how to handle it, you could even say the wrong thing to a kid. You know, you just looking for attention, or, you know, what do you have to be worried about, or what do you have to be depressed about, and just totally minimizing their cry for help.
Mm.
And so suicide, it definitely can be a cry for help, and it also can be neurological. There are things that's going on, that chemical imbalance in the brain and all those different things that's going on. And so we can't, whichever way it is, we cannot afford to just dismiss it.
When you talk about prevention, we talk about suicidal prevention. How do we as a community prevent someone? Because they say if they're going to do it, they're not going to tell anybody, they're just going to do it. How can we prevent that? What are some of the signals, what are some of the signs in one's behavior that will say, you know what, we've got to keep an eye on this individual, or that person has
right.
to be evaluated?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's important that we know that the way depression is one of the number one contributors to suicide, right? Depression is one of the number one. And I think we have to know what to look for. So, for example, if we're talking about depression in teens, it could look totally different than depression in an adult. Right. So depression in teens could look like a teen with behavioral problems. It could look like a teen who's acting out. It could look like a teenager who is reckless. Right. And so we have to look at those things. But there are signs of apathy, or people, teenagers, for example. They'll complain about pains, headaches, stomach aches, back aches, fatigue, difficulty sleeping. And that's also evident in adults
as well.
Really?
Yeah, well, 11-year-old and the 12-year-old supposed to be very active with a lot of energy. Okay, I can see
mm-hmm.
that.
Yeah, fatigue, difficulty concentrating or making decisions, or even feeling excessive or talking excessively about guilt, feeling guilty about things that might have happened, blaming themselves. Those are some of the things that you can look for in teenagers. And also in teenagers, some of the signs that you can look for is a teenager who's just withdrawn totally, and spending a lot of time by themselves. You can look at the way they're dressing. Look at the change in their friends. Their friends.
How about hygiene?
Hygiene, that's a big one. I mean, one of the things that I ask my clients who I, you know, might be showing signs of depression is, when was the last time you've taken a shower? When was the last time you've eaten? And when was the last time you brushed your teeth or changed your clothes? And
you
also
know, one
sleep hygiene.
It's crazy that you bring this up, because that's one of the systems of sexual abuse. A girl that be abused sexually is a change in hygiene, because she don't want to be touched.
And that could very well be. You know, there's so many different signs to look for. And, of course, the important thing for prevention for me is people being connected. I always ask, who is checking on you? Who checks on you? And we have to ask ourselves that. Who checks on you? Because
so you know your pattern.
Is
it possible that loneliness is a contributing factor also, because they don't have a support system?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you are just left to ruminate with the thoughts in your head and you're feeling depressed, and, you know, there's nobody to check on you to say how you're doing, or to recognize that your patterns of behavior has changed, that is so critical. It's so critical to have people who checks on you regularly and say, hey, girl, snap out of it. You're not, what's going on? This is not you. I'm seeing some things. How are you? And not just, I have a group of friends, women friends, who we check on each other because we're at that critical transitional part of our lives that at any given moment, any event can kind of take you out. You know, we're like 50 going through kids leaving home and all those different changes, right? But one thing we don't allow each other to do is we cannot cop out and say, I'm fine. That's not an option. When we start talking about, girl, I'm fine, it's like, oh, something's wrong.
Well, men, I'm a man. I feel that men may have difficulty in telling his friends, yo, I'm sad today, you know, because that's a sign of weakness to men. You know, I don't need anybody to check on me. I'm fine, you know. And he could be feeling like we'd be feeling negative. So for a man, that's difficult.
And I did a Facebook Live with Dr. Reginald Cunningham a couple weeks ago. And I had a dad on with his teenage son talking about depression in the black man and how, you know, he had some expectations for his teenage son. His teenage son was dealing with a significant change, and he didn't know how to deal with it. And at first he was just roughing his son up and saying, hey, you know, that's not how we don't do that. That's not how we express ourselves. We're not weak, you know. And then he learned differently that this is not his son's behavior. He's not tough and rough like dad grew up. And so he had to take a different approach to reach his teenage son. And I think that we need to learn a different approach. We need to change our narrative. We need to stop telling our young boys to stop crying or calling them babies. And that's mildly putting it.
You know what?
I've raised two black boys.
I might be guilty of that. Used to be guilty until other strategy and techniques were introduced to me. You know,
exactly.
And that was just a generation that, and you know, I grew up in a generation where boys wear blue, girls wear pink. You know, boys don't cry, fall, get a scratch, get up, and keep running. So why does, now some people will say that is feminizing the black boy. What would you say that to that comment?
I think that we have to really look at changing our narrative, because the thing about it is, we, as a woman, I want my husband to be able to relate to me in a sensitive way. But then when he relates to me about his feelings, I'm going to call him feminine. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's a double-edged sword, and I think we need to change that narrative, because we want, if our black men are going to stop dying, we need to give them the space to express themselves and be able to work and get in touch with those emotions, because society has told the black man that the only acceptable emotion or expected emotion really is anger.
That's true. You know,
and we need to know that anger is a secondary emotion. There are so many things that happen before they get to anger, but we have been culturalized and we have been socialized, especially the black man, to just go to anger. That's their default response. But what about, I'm sad, I was disappointed, I was fearful, I was afraid when that happened.
Miss Delia, I've been with you through this whole discussion. I've been saying amen through the whole discussion. I mean, you know, I consider myself a professional, you know, open-minded. I'm on the left. I can't go around people as a black man say, I'm scared.
Well, no, I'm not saying that you have to be vulnerable everywhere, but there you have to have your sacred places. And
but they said that men are supposed to suppress their fears,
and that's not healthy. Look at the rate of black men dying from prostate cancer and all kinds of other diseases.
Well, that's a hard one for me. It's only accepted, like, if you're going into battle, you might be a little nervous, or what have you, or you're picking up a baby for the first time, you might be a little nervous. That's okay. But to say that I'm scared, you know, of whatever's happening around you.
So what about the elders who now know better and have other tools? What about them teaching and providing a space for the younger ones who are coming up to be able to be vulnerable and to be transparent and to get in touch with their feelings within that safe space?
You know, I could see the young ones, because it's a new generation, but the older men that have been living with that stigma for 40, 50, 60 years, that's going to be a tough egg to crack.
Yeah, I mean, we don't change a culture overnight.
Yeah,
but
and it's going to start with those same little children that have depression triggers, that have different triggers, that all come from homes that might be dysfunctional. Yes, I think the young generation, we have to change the teaching. Yes, have to change the teaching. But older men, it's going to be tough for guys like myself that were brought up in that era.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But then, you know, at some point when we started out talking about awareness, at some point when that awareness comes, you have a choice to make. You know, are you going to continue doing the same things that you've been doing and expect different results? Because whether or not you're saying something, you are teaching. You might not be saying, I'm teaching you, young blood, I'm teaching you how to do this, but your actions, whether or not you're saying it, you are teaching.
Okay.
So if you want the same results, you can't, if you want different results, you can't keep perpetuating the same behaviors.
You know what, this has been a wonderful discussion, but if anyone want to contact you about the mentoring program, I think it's a beautiful program, or anything
Thank
else
you.
For information about domestic violence prevention, suicide prevention, mental illness, how can they contact you?
Oh, thank you for asking. They can contact me on my Facebook page, Ann Dillard, or www.anndillard.com. That's my website. And the thing that that I also want to share with people is if you are struggling or you have someone or a teenager who's struggling with thoughts of suicide and you don't necessarily know what to say, you can also text me at 555-888 and just put 10 tip number 10 TIPS and I'll send you 10 tips on how what to say, 10 things to say and 10 things not to say when somebody says I want to kill myself.
Well, how about this? Let me ask you this before I let you go. Let me ask you this before I let you go. How about a 20-year-old? A 20-year-old female just had a baby, out of wedlock, crying all the time, you know, angry and everything. Is that just depression or postpartum? What is that?
You know, there's a lot of things that could be happening there. And so, you know, unless you know that female, it's hard to diagnose and say what's going on. But I definitely would want that female to go to their OB gynecologist and get some help, go to their primary care doctor, get a full physical workup, and see what else might be contributing, because there are so many factors that could contribute to her sadness.
Okay. Well, Ms. Delia, I am going to invite you back on this show, because like I said, I left so many issues on the table that I like to pick your brain. But I know you got to go get your rest, you got to go catch a flight and everything. And I really appreciate you coming on my show.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Jones. I appreciate you having me on. And it's been good chatting with you tonight.
Oh, it won't be the last time you chat with me. I will be calling you again in a month or two if you have the time.
But hey, look, let me tell you. If you are afraid, don't be scared to say, I'm afraid.
I don't know about all that, Ms. Delia. I can't do it. I can't do
and
it.
And if you said,
I said I was open-minded. It's just certain things that just can't come in here. You know, I just can't do it. All right, Ms. Delia.
All right. Well, you can call me and tell me. I won't tell nobody else. I'll give you some techniques to use.
Okay. I gave them to myself. I'm scared. <You know? laughs>
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
All right. You have a safe trip.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Good night. That was great, and I know the people that have been listening and people that are going to download the show and everything, listen carefully to this woman. I think out of all the people that I had on this show that discussing this issue of depression in the Black community, dysfunction in the Black family, I think this sister had hit it on the nail. Her name is Ms. Ann Dillard of KIP Consulting Services. www.anndillard.com. I could get that test thing down real quick. So, that's another week. Oh, I know the last 2 weeks I've been missing the show. A show was dropped. I couldn't get it, you know, and I'm glad things are going well now. On one half, I still got some more problems to deal with this technology, but I'm glad for the people, you know. And if you go to the Black Urban America Facebook page, and you're going to see the show stop at September 11th. I have a problem getting the shows on that site. I might have to do another page. But I'll be back next week. That's all, folks. I am because we are. We are because I am. And tomorrow night, we have Shaka Zulu, a.k.a. Jomarian Harris, of The Elephant in the Room. Tomorrow, 8 p.m. See ya.
Hold it now.